You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 10th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. Joining us, as he does every Casual Friday, Cliff Schechter. So that we can ruminate and mull over the news of the week and perhaps the news of the future. Also on the program today, giving us movie reviews because Chris Rosen backed out at the last minute. Controversy. Will be Matthew Film Guy, which is not to say that Matthew Film Guy is sloppy second. It's just that we've had him, we have a rotation. And Chris Rosen just happens to be incredibly unreliable. On top of being a bad movie reviewer. But he's fun to have on the program. A little bit. Which is why he was invited. And then had the opportunity to back out at the last minute. Last night I filled in for Keith Olbermann. Still battling bronchitis. Not sure what the story is tonight. Follow his Twitter feed to find out if he's going to be healthy enough to do it tonight. If not, I may do it again. Not sure. Please cancel my membership. Please cancel my membership is what listener K wrote. I do not want to be associated with violence of any kind. Your interview with Jeff Smith today, referring to yesterday, indicated his movement is not adverse to violence. At least he gave a very mealy-mouthed response when you pressed him on the use of violence. I've been an avid supporter of your program. Thank you for that. And donated to Jeff's trip to Washington. Thank you for that as well. But I cannot be associated with an organization that condones violence of any kind in any way. Saddens me to ask you to please cancel my membership. I will continue to listen to the non-member podcast. I wish you all success. Wait a second. I got to tell you, first of all, without getting into the specifics of that, he's referring to, I will get into the specifics, but take this in my own pace. He's referring to the conversation we had with Jeff Smith yesterday relative to the back and forth between Christopher Hedges saying that the black block element, which we know from David Graeber's piece is tactics, but that element was a cancer in Occupy Wall Street. David Graeber responded in another piece saying that it's not an element, it's a tactic, and it's a tactic that actually is helpful. You cannot preclude people from doing this, but by encouraging black bloc tactics, it actually helps keep people from getting hurt because it sort of gives those people who insist upon more aggressive action, I guess. It's just that they sort of distinguish that they're going to be engaging in, or they could be engaging in that action, and gives other people a warning to stay away from them. Now, when we're talking violence here, I have never heard anybody say that there should be any tactics that are should be violent in the sense that they would hurt another human being. In fact, everything that I've read from David Graeber and from anybody else has explicitly said that is completely not condoned. But the idea of property destruction and whatnot, I don't believe that the Occupy Wall Street has condoned it. I think they simply said, we're not going to, it's not our place to tell people what to do. But aside from the question as to whether or not Jeff condones violence, or somehow I have condoned violence by having that conversation. Look, you don't want to be a member, don't be a member. But where I don't understand the sort of how you are morally cleansing yourself by only listening to the free part of the podcast. Jeff Smith was on the free part of the podcast yesterday. So you're just going to listen to the free part of the podcast because you don't support. I don't get the thinking there. Can someone help me out?
Sam, don't you know that the members fund our funding of the anarchist sects in this country?
I just don't get it. I just don't get the logic here. You're going to listen to the free podcast, but you're just not going to support the show. Because you don't condone violence, but you realize that you may hear, well, that very interview on the free podcast.
No,
I just don't get it.
But regardless of that, we are presenting a guest on the show, and he is voicing his opinion, and we are simply reporting and talking and interviewing him. What his views are, even if they were what you think they are, does not in any way represent our views.
No, and I think my feeling on this is, from a tactical standpoint, I think it would be better from Occupy Wall Street's perspective to say that we do not condone violence, if the GA came out with that. That's personally my interpretation of the tactic. But I don't know. I haven't really given much thought about it. I don't know if I have a massive moral problem. I don't think it's helpful to be throwing a rock through a Starbucks window. But I don't – it's not high on my list of things that I'm concerned about. Let's put it that way. You realize, Kent. Do you realize that that when you pay your taxes, you're also paying in support of far more violence than you are by supporting this program? I can assure you of that. And you obviously don't have the same obligation to pay for membership as you do for paying for taxes on this program. But I don't know. I just thought that was sort of a weird response to have. I'm not going to listen to your show at all anymore because I don't want to taint my ears with any talk of potential violence. But I'm just not going to listen to the paid part of the show. And I don't quite follow the logic there. We're going to talk more about this with Cliff, but the Obama administration has reached a compromise with the bishops. Or let me say this. I don't know if they've reached it with the bishops, but they've announced a compromise position. And I got to say, this compromise position seems like not much of a compromise to me. I mean, I think if what I'm hearing is correct, the Obama administration has said, okay, to these religious institutions, you don't have to be involved in the transaction between your insurance company and women. If your insurance company offers prescription drug benefits. We're just going to tell the insurance companies that you have to offer birth control. And therefore, you will not have to pay for expanding this coverage. Now, here's the other little dirty secret. It's cheaper for the insurance companies on an actuarial basis to provide free birth control than it is to deal with the implications of not providing that free birth control. So I don't know that there's any extra cost involved anyways. Now, of course, an insurance company probably would prefer to get some money from prescription coverage. But I think given the choice between no coverage of in terms of birth control and providing free birth control, I think actuarially speaking, they would rather do the latter. So this is a huge, if this ends up being the compromise, I have to give credit where credit's due. This is a huge win for women. This is a huge win for the Obama administration times two, because it has been a complete wedge issue in terms of the campaign. We'll talk more about that later. And I think I speculated about this on the program yesterday. I think the Obama administration knew what they were doing on this. I want to just touch on this for a moment before we go to Cliff. And let me also say that on majority.fm, we have links to a survey. We're going to try and see if we can get ads from a different company on our free podcast. I don't know if it'll work because, like I've said in the past, the amount of downloads that we have should have made it possible for us to get ads through Libsyn, but we were 10, 12, 13 times more than the minimum downloads you need for ads. But because we're a liberal political show, it just doesn't happen. But we're going to look, we're looking at a different company, and we have links to two surveys on majority.fm. You only need to take one. One takes a little longer than the other. Decide, you know, which one you have time to do. Either one is greatly appreciated. Obviously, the longer one is even more appreciated because we get a more of a notion of what you like or don't like about the show and what you're interested in. But I can't promise you that I'm going to change the show based on any of that anyways. But it's still helpful. This story I wanted to do for a couple of days. It's rather distressing. There's a poll that finds broad support for Obama's counterterrorism policies. 2-1 Americans say the president's handling of terrorism is a major reason to support rather than oppose his bid for re-election. You know, people perceive him as a great terror fighter because he killed Osama bin Laden. I think I've said multiple times in the past I would have preferred us bringing him to trial, if possible, and it certainly seems like it was possible, because it is a reflection on our humanity and, frankly, just how evolved we are as citizens and as a society. And I think also would have been good to show that we're a nation of laws. But the survey shows 70% of respondents approve of Obama's decision to keep open the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Now, you know, it depends on what side of the argument here. If you say to an Obama bot, he kept Guantanamo open, they say it was the Senate and the House that kept it open. He had no choice. But when 70% approve of it, then, of course, it's his choice. But that's not the part that I find disturbing about this. The poll shows that 53% of self-identified liberal Democrats and 67% of moderate or conservative Democrats support keeping Guantanamo Bay open. That is a stunning number. 77% of liberal Democrats endorse the use of drones that are killing civilians in Pakistan. These are shocking numbers. I can't compare the drone use. But the idea that 53% of self-identified liberal Democrats and 67% of other Democrats favor keeping Guantanamo Bay open is just stunning. In 2006, only 57% of Americans across the board supported using Guantanamo Bay, keeping Guantanamo Bay open. And so we've seen a couple of things here. In 2006, under Bush, 25% of Democrats viewed the Patriot Act as a necessary tool. 53% said it went too far. 5 years later, under Obama, 35% said the act was necessary. Only 40% thought it went too far. In other words, there's two things we're seeing here. Either the vast majority of our population are just lemmings, and they're just this is just all a game for them, like football. I'm on Team Blue, so if coach says it's the right thing to do, that's what I'm going to do. Or we're also seeing the implications of the coach going out there and leading. Not leading in the right direction, but he's leading. You know, we see this. How many times have we heard the defenders of the establishment say, you know, you can't, President Obama can't do as much as you think he can do. You can't change public opinion as much as you think he can. He's just the president. But here we see Democrats selling out. Guantanamo Bay was a massive rallying cry for Democrats when George Bush was president. It's pathetic and it's disturbing. I don't know what else to say about it. It's pathetic and disturbing. When we take your calls later in the program, anybody wants to weigh in on that, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Welcome, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm doing pretty good. Lots to talk about. I want to start now. I want to make sure that we get to this. I saw a on the Today Show. They played it on. I know where I saw it on the Lawrence's show last night. They played a clip of this thing about the guns, and I know this is this is a pretty amazing story. We'll talk about that in a bit. Before we get to that, I want to talk about a couple of things that I see as connected. Santorum's rise and this this contraceptive mandate.
Ironic that those two things happen at the same time, huh?
I'm not so convinced. Why do you think Santorum is back on the rise now?
Well, my theory. I mean, this is not. I'm not going to act like this is the most creative theory in the world. But first of all, he was given a bit of a pass in that Romney was spending all his money beating up Gingrich and not Santorum, and that's just classic multi-candidate primary politics where two guys beat each other up. The guy that takes the worst of it is the guy getting beaten up, but the guy who's doing the beating up also has his poll numbers go down because people don't like somebody who attacks. You know, not to say that Romney wasn't also attacked with some of those Gingrich ads that were pretty rough, but Santorum stayed away from it. So that was part of it. But part of it overall was, excuse me, you and I both know that Santorum is a raging corporatist, right? I mean, the other day he made the argument about prescription drugs in this callous way that, you know, hey, you have to go out and pay for an iPad, you got to pay for drugs too.
Right.
You know, as if there's no difference. So we know that about him. We know that he's a guy that claims that he, you know, tried to support a cap so-called tort reform, a cap on non-economic damages in courts of $250,000, and then his wife sued her chiropractor for $500,000. He testified in the case. But, you know, that's okay for him. Corporations can limit the rest of our power, but you know, not his.
Right.
No. But with that said, what I think is going on is we're in economically hard times. We're talking about three states, two of which were in the Midwest, that have disproportionately older populations, older and whiter. Minnesota, particularly Missouri. My guess is Colorado. I don't know the demographics as well, but a lot of people have retired out there. So, you know, and that's who the Republican base is trying to, you know, they're trying to gin up. There's even an article about a month ago about how Newt Gingrich kind of knew the language of old people, which is pretty funny in and of itself. and I think with that disproportionate kind of electorate, I've talked about this a little bit this week, I think that's where, you know, we know the real Santorum, but, you know, he talks about, he can talk convincingly about his grandfather being a coal miner. He's from Western Pennsylvania. So, you know, he's from that sort of heart of this area where he understands and knows how to speak the language. And I think, you know, when you hear Mitt Romney sort of offering the $10,000 bets and laughing off, you know, amounts of money that are huge to the people, you don't hear Santorum making those mistakes. When you hear Mitt Romney, and I think this is key, because a lot of older voters are, even who are more conservative, still realize, like the rest of us, how important programs like Social Security and Medicare are. In fact, Sue and the Lake did a poll recently that showed that in five states, three of them, in fact, were Colorado, Minnesota, and Missouri, showed something like 74% of Republicans, you know, didn't want Social Security cut. Thought it was a very good program. So, that's to give an example, and you've got Mitt Romney walking around calling, you know, who's said a number of occasions that Social Security is a fraud. And if you think about what Mike Huckabee has said, you know, he looks like the guy that laid you off, which is a great Huckabee comment from 2008. You got Romney coming in with his 15% tax rate. He looks like the guy that laid you off. He makes jokes about firing people. He calls Social Security, you know, which for all these people, Social Security and Medicare are essentially their subsistence. And even if they're conservative in a lot of other ways, they're not on those programs. They realize, like most of us do, how important they are. And Romney's sort of, you know, talking about cutting Medicare, you know, left and right. And he's talking, and it sounds, even if Santorum says things that aren't so great, it's worse coming out of Romney's mouth because of who he is. And so to me, what it speaks to is the fact that you've got this older white electorate. Obama won a lot of that electorate last time. People thought it was lost forever. I think Mitt Romney could find a way of giving it back to him. I think on issues like, taxes and Social Security, Obama can win that electorate back. And I think what's going on right now is they're going to Santorum. So that's those are my 2 cents.
I got to tell you, I think this this contraceptive thing was just a we have spent plenty of time bashing Obama, but I think this contraceptive thing was an amazing twofer win for the Obama administration. I don't know if they how much they plan this ahead, but the idea that they come out with this mandate that is not applicable until August of 2013, and they announce it right at this point in the campaign on the Republican side, when Mitt Romney had a similar law in Massachusetts that basically said these institutions have to provide. We're talking about contraception now. This is like bait for the right-wingers. The Obama administration would want nothing more than to make this campaign and this election season about social issues. They want it to be nothing more than a choice between Obama and whoever this other guy is. And so they want that other guy to be seen as extreme as possible. Romney's pulled to the right socially, or Santorum is gets a benefit from this in the primary race. It's a primary.
Well, it does two key things. I don't mean to cut you off, Sam, but it's, I think your point's brilliant. I hadn't even really thought about that. Like maybe I should give the Obama people credit for some of that multidimensional chess that I never do. But the point you're making, I think, is brilliant in that that issue brings out the worst in both of his key opponents right now. Because what it ends up doing is showing Romney to be, once again, the flip-flopper. There's no way he can explain away his support for this. And he's tried, and it's funny as it always is when he tries to lie, which is about every 3 seconds. But, you know, where he basically was like, well, that was already the law in Massachusetts. And, you know, because you can't change laws that already are law or fight for things. Yeah. I mean, he's just – so it makes him look pathetic. And then what it does with Santorum is it brings out the raging social freak, you know, the guy that just thinks man on dog all day. And, you know, if you, if you masturbate, you're committing a murder. You've aborted a baby. And, you know, I mean, in all seriousness, the insane – Santorum, and that's what's happened. So basically, it's shown Santorum for the crazy nutbag that he is, and it's shown Romney for the flip-flopping, soulless creature he is.
And on a policy level,
I gotta give you credit. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's some interesting stuff.
And you know that analysis stands even aside from the fact that on a policy level, they announced today the Obama administration. It appears because this is just sort of breaking now that what they're suggesting is that they're just going to mandate that insurance companies provide these contraceptives free without even going through, having to go through the institution will have to do nothing. This will all be initiated by the insurance companies themselves. It won't pass through these institutions. Institutions will have nothing to do with it, and so they can maintain their moral purity. The insurance companies probably at the end of the day don't mind it either because in the end
they still profit from it.
It saves them money because they would rather deal with the healthcare costs of a woman who is not dealing with the complications of either any disease that you have that birth control pills might help deal with or unwanted pregnancies. And so this is a win all across the board. And I think the Obama administration, at the very least, went into this thinking this was going to be a win-win, at the very least they would get. I think this was great. And I think it's great also that we can have this conversation that people – there's just more awareness of, like, you know, the idea that a group of bishops – could basically say our desire to discriminate when we are engaged in activities that are not primarily religious, i.e. running a hospital or running some other type of institution, our ability to discriminate is greater than the rights of a woman to have legal prescriptions covered. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
The freedoms that have actually been provided by this country in our law. Exactly. And, you know, yeah, it's, oh, they're fun people, aren't they?
Let me ask you this question. I want to talk about this briefly before we go to this gun thing. Have you seen this poll about the support of self-identified liberal Democrats and moderate conservative Democrats for keeping Guantanamo Bay open? Have you seen that?
I have, which I was rather shocked by.
It's pretty disappointing, isn't it?
The drones thing doesn't shock me as much, to be honest with you. The Guantanamo shocks me because I just can't fathom what the justification is. You know, why one would think you need to keep a gulag open in the country that we are. I guess a lot of right-wing talking points for years being repeated by too many people on the left. And not, you know, that may be it. I don't know. The drones thing, I think there's some logic behind it. You know, I've got mixed feelings on drones, to be honest with you. But certainly I'm not for targeting American citizens. And there's a number of places where I would pull the plug. In some areas, if it means large amounts of soldiers not going to war, I think it can be a rather good thing. You can take out a bin Laden with a drone. That's not the worst thing in the world. So I'm not, you know, I'm not, I don't think I've got a pure position on that. But I do. But I think that's what some people are thinking on drones is they're thinking, well, that means, you know, less soldiers going to war. The problem is that that's not always the intention of those up top. Is that, you know, it just becomes a part of the bigger war machine, and you're now going into neighborhood places and hitting people and people who are American citizens and people who are, you know, who are, let's just say you've got very questionable evidence on it best. It's far away from a battlefield, and that's a problem for me. It's another one of those things where, you know, I would favor the use of drones if I thought it could be regulated properly. The problem is that,
but Cliff,
how do you do that?
I don't mean to cut you off, but the leaving aside the drones thing, because we don't necessarily have the data match up, but what do you make of the fact that the number of Democrats who approve of keeping Guantanamo open has actually increased significantly? Significantly since 2006.
It hasn't been in the news. Osama bin Laden being, you know, disappearing from the scene means that this stuff hasn't been covered as much. You know, the president has come out in support of it, and as you know, there's a number of people in the Democratic Party, just like in the Republican Party, that blindly support whatever their leader does. I think it's a combination of factors. I mean, out of sight, out of mind. You're not hearing nearly as much about it. When you do hear about it, Obama chose to keep it open, so you're with Obama, and people have this sort of thing where they're like, well, you know, he's not like Bush, so I'm sure he'll make sure it's safe and it's okay,
right.
Which doesn't change the fact that, A, it's morally wrong, and whether it's safe and okay, it doesn't really matter. People aren't being strangled to death there. It's morally wrong, and it doesn't fit. B, it's an abrogation of our Constitution, which shouldn't be bother people, you know, also. And see, you know, again, it doesn't work. I mean, all it ends up doing in the end is pissing some more people off and ruining your image around the world. There's a lot of reasons to think it's stupid. You know what I mean? But a lot of people don't think that the way you and I do. They think, well, I'm for Obama. Obama's for it. It must be okay. So, you know, there you go. That's the best I can come up with. Maybe you've seen some polling.
No, I haven't. I just find it incredibly disappointing and disturbing. Although, you know, gosh knows how many Democrats were in favor of the Iraq invasion as well. It's just that I find it just disturbing to see that type of, and also I, you know, it speaks to the ability of the president to move public opinion, at the very least, Democrats' opinion, in a certain direction, albeit in this case for the worse, in my estimation. But let's.
To me, it disturbs. I'll just say it quickly. Just so I'm clear, it disturbs the hell out of me, and I don't really see how anyone living in a democracy and believing in the principles that we're supposed to believe in the Bill of Rights. I don't even understand, frankly. You know, I grew up thinking certain things about the way our government worked. I'm not even sure how it could stay open. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I guess this to me just shows the weakness of our system, because essentially it's sort of like Andrew Jackson when, you know, was a judge, Justice Marshall, came down with his order and he said, well, he made his order, now he can enforce it. And sort of like at some point the courts kept finding a number of these things, the Boumediene case and others, to be illegal, and they keep finding ways around it. And at some point, who can stop them if the president just says, no, I'm not going to listen? You know, it's a serious problem, and I don't know how you solve that, because I don't know how there can be any question, at least if I understood civics and everything I grew up with, that the thing is hugely unconstitutional and is terrible and emulates what our enemies do, you know? And, I mean, I don't know where else to go with that. That thing should have been shuttered a long time ago.
All right, well, let's change gears here for a second. I want to play a clip of this audio from this NBC report that I guess it may have played earlier in the day, but they replayed part of it on Lawrence last night. And I found it rather disturbing. And, of course, I know that you're heavily involved in mayors against gun violence. And I want to let's play this clip. And I want to get your reaction to this. I had no idea about this. I've heard of the gun show loophole, essentially, where you can go to a gun show and dealers can sell you a gun without any background check. This I did not know, that you could just go on Craigslist. Play this.
The law at gun stores, you have to get a background check before you can buy a weapon. But online, in most states, anyone from law-abiding citizens to dangerous criminals, even terrorists, can get just about any weapon they want, no questions asked. Our hidden camera investigation shows the deals going down in broad daylight in suburban mall parking lots.
They are some of the most lethal weapons out there. And we were able to buy all of them in a single day with no background checks, no questions asked. It's this easy. Hundreds of thousands of guns for sale on hundreds of websites. We responded and set up meetings at popular shopping malls.
So how much was it that we agreed on?
500.
We bought everything from this police-grade pistol.
He could be a dangerous criminal, yet you still sold him this gun with hollow-point bullets.
Absolutely.
To this semi-automatic assault rifle.
You sold a man a dangerous weapon. What if he went and shot somebody with it?
We did it over and over again, our buyer even hinting he's a criminal.
No paperwork, no background checks. Probably could have passed the darn thing anyway.
Within hours, we bought 8 guns.
Good God!
Even this 50 caliber weapon, so powerful, it could take down a helicopter.
The people you just sold it to could be terrorists, and you sold it no questions asked.
Remember, at a gun store, a background check is required, but online, nothing. And believe it or not, in most states, it's completely legal.
Is this like a candy store for criminals?
I love the background music, actually, which you really notice when when it's audio. Boom, 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 boom.
It's
but this is amazing.
Well, I mean, this is the stuff, you know, and I've worked on this stuff for a couple of years, and I just, that's the thing, man, is I, you know, it's nothing to do with people not being educated, not being smart, not being, you know, involved in politics. You are, a lot of people are, but I didn't know this until I started working on it. It's insane. I mean, we have gun laws that most likely rival Somalia's, and when you're at the point where, it, you know, you took point out the gun show loophole. So, you know, you can go to these gun shows, and some of the stuff you find there, because I've been to a few of them, are insane in and of themselves. But you can go to suburban, you know, parking lots, you know, in malls, you know, where you're taking your kid and I'm taking my kids, and these guys are taking out 50 caliber sniper rifles in the back, which they show in that, and telling them a 50 caliber sniper rifle can shoot 5 miles and can take down a helicopter. Now, I mean, think about that. No regulation, nothing. I mean, and this is all the doing of the National Rifle Association, because they once were a group that cared about sporting and hunting and training people to be, you know, good, you know, solid citizens, I suppose, and people that you know, shot target practice and hunting, which are things that I used to be a target shooter. I think when you were at my birthday party, Sam, you saw a little joke that I had a framed little thing from the NRA that I got as a sharpshooter. I was younger because I used to shoot on a riflery team. I have no issue with any of that stuff. But buying a 50, you know, caliber rifle, buying an assault weapon and selling them in a parking lot to anybody and no regulations whatsoever, I mean, this is how members of Hamas have gotten guns. This is how members of the IRA have gotten guns. This is how the drug cartels have gotten guns. The guy that went and shot up the Pentagon, John Patrick Bedell, got his gun that way. You know, the Columbine guys got guns that way. You know, I mean, we can go on and on. And all this stuff is so preventable. It's so ridiculous. And, you know, it's the same arguments every time. Oh, people will get guns anyhow. No, actually, they won't. They may find a way to. But it's amazing when you push something to the black market how much more expensive it is. And when you have the FBI watching how much more often people trying to buy those guns will get arrested. You know, I mean, it just, I don't know. I mean, there's a point where you sit there and you just say, what has to happen? Gabby Giffords got shot in the back of the head, you know, by a guy who the military had determined was not mentally fit to be there. And yet he was in, so he should not have gotten a gun, but our lax system allowed him to. And it's like, what has to happen? How many people have to die? You know, I mean, it's just, again, this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. The NRA is the arms dealer lobby. It is all like, it's the same as when you look at the banks, you wonder who's protecting the banks and why they're doing it. Certain front groups for the banks, they're doing it because they're getting paid huge money by the banks. And we're looking at who's protecting energy companies, oil companies, who's doing it. Certain front groups, is because they're paying them. This is no different. People think of the NRA the way they were 40 years ago and not who they are now. They are a front group for arms dealers. That's all they do. If there's a background check and one fewer gun is sold, that means they make less money. And that's all this is about. So it's not Second Amendment. Even Justice Scalia in his recent decision came to the conclusion that, you know, even though the overturn the D.C. gun ban, he said that you know, in following the tradition of the United States, it was completely consistent with the Second Amendment for people to ban concealed carry in certain areas, to force there to be criminal and mental health background checks. I mean, you know, so even Scalia is agreeing to this stuff, and yet that's the NRA. They've got their money, and they make their huge money, and they buy off politicians, and nothing gets done.
To be fair, that big 50 caliber sniper rifle, you can actually line up like a half a dozen deer right and just shoot right through them. So you got to keep that.
I mean, you actually can put like an elephant behind a deer, behind a moose, behind like a Hummer.
Right, and shoot through a small hill to get to them.
So that is true. That's important, is that you don't want there to be any kind of obfuscation when you're trying to hunt.
No.
And so if you need to, for example, shoot an animal through a building, it allows you to do that. And that does make you a better hunter, I suppose. That's a good point.
No more having to sit in one of those, stands up in the tree. You can just basically hang out in your house and just take them out through a wall, essentially. So, Cliff Schechter.
Well, I appreciate you talking about this, Sam, because people need to know about this.
I saw that last night on Lawrence, and I knew that was something that would get you riled up. And I always love to rile Cliff Schechter up, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm no fun when I'm not riled up. You know, I'm just kind of a boring dork when I'm not riled
up.
No,
you're fine. You're
bringing
it's
me
just,
to
it's
my, you
it's
know.
Two different flavors, both of which I love. Cliff Schechter, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on as always, Sam.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Matthew, film guy, on some films. He's going to be pissed because I didn't take his film selections from last week, from 2 weeks ago, because I didn't think he'd be on until next week, or actually even after I take a vacation, in which case I was going to watch those movies. I did watch Isabel Gillies, but we can all have this conversation when we get Matthew on the line. We'll be right back after this. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Jimmy Reefercake's musical stylings, and on the benefit to all of our healths from government regulation. That and more. We'll be right back after this.
An idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back. You know, the problem with not having Chris Rosen on and having someone else give movie recommendations is that I get used to the idea that Chris Rosen never listens to the program, not before he comes on, not after he's been on, not during the week. Now he doesn't go back and listen to the podcast, but Matthew Film Guy, he listens, don't you, Matthew?
I do listen, much to your consternation, I'm sure. I just heard you say you didn't take any of my requests, but that's okay.
First of all, I didn't not take your recommendations. I did take your recommendations. I put them on my list. I put them on my Netflix queue.
Okay.
But I've been flying solo for the past week with my daughter, which puts me in a near catatonic state by the end of the day. So my capacity to watch a foreign film is diminished. Now, just as I said that, I realized that I did watch a foreign film. No, I don't think I did. A Man on Wire was not a foreign film. Man on Wire.
No, it was a foreign person, but an American film.
Right. He spoke in English. Okay. But he had an accent. So I thought that was sort of...
It's on the line.
I got to say, that movie... I have not watched you gave a couple of great Iranian films that I will watch.
Yeah.
But I got to say, Man on Wire, that was an amazing movie.
I've heard nothing but good things.
You haven't seen it?
Actually see it. No, I actually haven't seen it.
See this? So now I get the opportunity to give you a recommendation for film.
Thank you very much. I will take it and not watch it for a couple of weeks.
You know, don't be so you're being too sensitive.
I'm just here to help.
I heard from Isabel Gillies last week after I said she was too chatty. She sends me an email and she's like, "What do you mean I'm too chatty?" And I'm like, "Why are people still listening to the program after you guest on it? You should go do other things. Shouldn't keep listening to the show."
No, I like her personality. I think you guys make a good team.
I wasn't criticizing her personality. There were other people who were. Other people definitely were, yes. But I didn't say I agreed with that. I don't agree with that. Of course not.
No, I know.
Or I wouldn't have her on the program.
Exactly.
She is chatty.
That's right. But I feel like each person brings a different flavor, you know, that you have doing these reviews. And I think it works well.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people may find Isabel a little bit exhausting. But in a good way.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
You know what? I mean, if you've been out...
Like a good workout. When you're done, you feel good.
Or if you, you take your kid to the zoo at the end, you're exhausted, but it was a great experience.
Exactly. You know, you've earned something there.
Right.
But, you know, this brings me to ask you a sort of a question now, just to do a little bit better on these segments. What exactly are you looking for in a movie that you want to watch? Because I know I have various moods and interests, and if you want a movie that's like escapism, or if you want to, you know, pay attention to something that shows you life in a new way, something deep, or maybe a political documentary that teaches you something. Where do you fall?
Sam wants animated features.
No, I don't know. I don't like animated. That's really the only thing I don't like.
Spirited Away this week.
I loved your recommendations from last week. I loved it when you Nobody's Business. I thought that was a great movie. I still have on my list Four Lions. I'm gonna watch that.
Should definitely be at the top. Sam, definitely still.
Yes. No, it is. It is at the top. I may not get a chance to watch as many movies as I want until Mile is on vacation, because then
that's
all right.
I'm not gonna make you write an essay or something. But, I want to help you out here.
No, I understand. I find I'm watching less and less online because every night I go home, I just keep pulling stories. I just read more stories, news stories, because I'm obsessed.
And I appreciate you doing that. I don't want you to sacrifice the quality of the show just to watch some movies.
No, I appreciate your appreciation of that. But I have to say that, I like documentaries. Documentaries tend to be the ones that I watch the most, although I have to say that I also like, I like movies that range from the, 3 Days of the Condor, like that whole 1970s, early 70s sort of conspiracy stuff. Even Capricorn One, crappy movie, but a great movie in that respect.
Intrigue. Yeah, I get you.
You know, I'm a huge Clint Eastwood fan. I can name any Clint Eastwood movie that was made before 1980 by simply listening to like literally 15 seconds of it. If you play me three gunshots from any Clint Eastwood movie prior to 1980, I will tell you what movie it was. And I just by the sound of the gunshots.
This is putting the whole halftime in America ad in a new light now.
That's right.
Do you feel like personally disappointed by him, or?
No, I don't care. I mean, look, I did
you
see
that was
Every Which Way
by
But Loose?
David Gordon Green.
That I also like Ronin. You know, just
Ronin.
To give you like
That's
how
samurai.
What's that?
Samurai
no, Ronin
stuff?
Was that De Niro movie by Franken.
Oh,
what's
oh right, like car chase stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
French Connection.
You know that? French Connection.
Yeah, I like, and I like, I actually like the Bourne Identity series.
Okay, we're the needle is tipping towards Brainless on my scale here.
No,
which
no,
I appreciate.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Is I go from Brainless to, very intense small documentaries.
Okay, well, so maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree trying to push these sort of subtle psychological, emotional, artistic dramas on you.
No.
Okay, because actually what I thought was that, you know, we have a good sort of range. Chris Rosen gives you the sort of popular, crappy comedies.
I don't think I will ever watch another recommendation from him again. I mean, we have him on just to see what he's going to recommend.
Right, and then Gillies gives you sort of these really interesting, insightful sort of documentaries, which I also have a spot for in my heart. And I'm like the foreign art film guy. I mean, but maybe that's a distinction that doesn't need to be made because I've got plenty of great stuff on Netflix that is.
Yeah, no, go. Don't be so.
Don't think too hard.
Yeah, let me put it this way. Take off the turtleneck.
But can I keep the bongos?
Yeah, just to take the turtleneck and the what do you call it? The
goatee?
No, the beret.
The beret.
Put that aside.
Not the beret, Sam.
Don't worry about it. Just give me a movie review.
All right. Well, it's not. And also, you keep calling them reviews, but there's more like recommendations.
Recommendation,
right?
Review.
Yeah,
come
on. Yeah. Okay. I don't want to nitpick here. Well, see, the thing is, I had a sort of continuity pick from last week, since we had some Iranian films that sort of show their sort of stultifying social situations.
Uh huh.
So I thought I'd recommend an Israeli film that sort of does the same for Israelis, but maybe since you didn't watch that. But you know what? I let the cat out of the bag. I'll go with it.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite movies from the last 10 years. I'm thinking maybe you saw it. It's called Late Marriage by an Israeli filmmaker named Dover Keshvili. It's from 2001, and it's actually about Georgian Jews who, as you might know, Israel's made up of a lot of Russian and that area's immigrants, and their sort of push to marry off their 30-something son, who's more of, you know, he's acculturated to the sort of Western Israeli society, and they want him to marry a virgin, a Jew, and he's in love with this divorcee who's, like, totally not an acceptable marriage partner for him. And it's sort of, he's torn between his family's sort of approval and, as someone who's married outside the faith, I thought maybe this is something that you might appeal to you.
That sounds exactly like my story.
I'm sure your parents loved Nikki from the get-go, though. I mean, how could they not?
No, they did, actually. They didn't care.
Yeah.
They didn't care.
Yeah.
Didn't care.
But, you know, just to make the point maybe that, you know, it's not just these sort of Muslim countries that have social mores and sort of cultural prejudices. It's also a lot of Western cultures that have the same thing. And this movie's just really great. It's heart-wrenching. It's a little on the graphic side in terms of sex, but it's...
let me knock that off then. I do not appreciate.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you're kind of a prude when it comes to that stuff.
I'm not a big fan of I always find those scenes to be gratuitous.
Well, no, see, this film is not, it's not made to be like titillating. This is definitely sort of in the social realist sort of vein of Mike Lee or.
Okay.
These kinds
There's
of
nothing so, that like makes my eyes roll back into my head is like when you hear the music come on and the tender scene where, you know, like I just, oh God, give me a break.
No,
can't we
is,
just like say, we know this is going to happen. Save us the 2 minutes and get to the fight scene.
Is that how it is between you and Nikki?
That's right. I wasn't talking about the fight scene between the two people. But yes,
I understand.
We just go,
no, it's like
that's right. Nikki and I just go immediately to the fight scene.
To the fight scene, sure. Yeah, I know. Okay, that is what this movie basically is. This is a hard-nosed, almost cynical about the sort of trap that he's in movie. It's really great. So definitely put it on your list. But you know, I also had a movie that's on Netflix that is one that you and Myla could watch together, And I don't know if that's worth being the second pick, or I could go to Amazon and give you one of my other ones.
Yeah, let's hear the one that we could watch together.
Okay, so this is also on Netflix. And
is it going to be Ronin?
It's Ronin with Robert De Niro and Jean Reno. No, actually, it's an old movie from the 40s called The Boy with Green Hair.
The Boy?
You ever heard of it?
No.
Okay, it stars a young Dean Stockwell, who you'll remember from everything from Quantum Leap to Blue Velvet. You know, I mean, just been in everything. And it's, you know, it's been said to be a
Battlestar Galactica.
Allegory. That's right, Battlestar Galactica. How could I forget? He's the main guy. Well, no spoilers, sorry. He's one guy. And, yeah, it's about a boy in a small town. It made in 1948.
Wait a second.
Still
was he the main guy on Battlestar Galactica?
Well, he was the evilest of the Cylons, if you recall.
Right. I wouldn't characterize him as the main guy.
No, they had a sort of, they had a real democratic
right.
quorum.
Theoretically.
Theoretically, but see, but he was, you learned.
Well, don't ruin it.
Okay, sorry, I won't ruin it. Everyone go out and see Battlestar Galactica before everything I've said. Okay, so it's about a boy who wakes up in a small town with green hair, and it's so shocking. The doctor doesn't know what it is, and the parents don't know what it is, and it's about being different. And it's about sort of, you know, the pros and cons of being different in a world of conformity. So,
actually would be great because, Myla, I got to say, it's becoming clearer and clearer. I thought for a while because she's, you know, she's a cute kid that perhaps she wasn't my child. But I'm like starting to see, like, she's a weird kid.
Yeah.
She's got a little bit of weirdness in her. You know, she just sits at the table and starts, like, making ridiculous sounds and, you know, tries to be annoying. And I just, that's basically me.
Well, I'm still laughing from the Gaia story from 2 days ago. That was awesome.
Yeah. Now, she's too young. But now she's, like, conscious of, like, what she's doing, which is basically, I'm going to try and get under everybody's skin here and just see how I can do that. And that sounds exactly like me.
It doesn't sound like it's too hard to do that, though, for you, is it?
What, to get under my skin?
Yeah, for her to do it.
Not at all. She can't get under my skin.
Oh, okay.
Are you all kidding?
Right. I don't know.
You don't think I can win a war of wills with a 6.5-year-old?
With your particular 6.5-year-old? You know, I've been.
No, I can. She drives Nikki crazy, but she doesn't get to me.
All right. Hey, I didn't mean to infer. Sorry.
All right. Just take it easy, buddy. Whose side are you on?
You know, no, I'm on your side. And, you know, this actually reminds me of a comment somebody made about, like, the tension that they like between me and Marin that we don't have. And I just wanted to make a comment on that. And this is not to say anything against Mark, who I love and is still my friend.
What do you mean?
Didn't someone wrote in last week and said, I prefer the tension that Matthew had with Marin on his show.
Are you doing a different show? Who wrote that in? I never saw that.
Somebody said it. Go back and listen to
it. I think it's probably just someone you know that just said it to you.
No.
If people don't know, Matthew was on the early, you were like a regular on WTF until it got big.
I did a few parts while, you know, try to get it launched from the dock. Yeah.
And how much help is he? Does he even talk to you anymore?
Yes, I'm still doing video stuff for him.
Right,
you're trying to start shit.
Right.
You're trying to start shit.
No, I'm just saying. I know the way Marin works.
Well, the format of the show has changed. To be fair to everyone involved, the format of the show has changed substantially. He was searching a little bit for what he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
But the point is, he used to get mad at me for talking in the very way that you appreciate me talking, just because he's got a little personal hang-up about, like, who knows more than who and who doesn't know about what.
Yes, Marin is uptight about what he doesn't know, because it makes him feel stupid.
And I understand that.
Get uptight when I feel like the people I'm talking to don't know more than I do.
Right, and I appreciate that about you. And again, not to
I'm
not
still
to
searching
start
in your case.
Hey, wait, you appreciated me last week. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Dude, it wasn't last week. It was 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, please, whatever I meant.
All right, so the movies.
Once you start watching the films I recommend, then you'll...
Marriage... And The Boy with Green Hair. I love how Matthew says the films. That's why we call him Matthew Film Guy as opposed to Matthew Movie Guy.
You know, technically it says movie on there, but I don't care. Movie, film, whatever. They're, you know, it's all the same to me.
Matthew Film Guy, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Sam.
We will talk to you again soon. I will give you an update on those films.
Great. Enjoy.
Films. Yes. And perhaps we'll have a glass of Chardonnay while we watch that film. I'll put on my... I'll put on my goatee and my turtleneck and my beret and watch the films. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that portion of our program where we present to you this week's Song and Review. You'll remember that the Screaming Majority is on hiatus. And so instead of two offerings, we have only one this week. But always a welcome and a consistently, more or less, on the mark, Jimmy Reefer Cake. Sammy, another week, another song. Please put that link to Amazon again so people can support. We will, of course. We have the link to Jimmy Reefer Cake's album. Please tell them I really hope they choose to support my music. Here are the lyrics. Well, let's play the song. It is Guns and Religion. It is about the Republican base, and I don't know how more apropos this song could be based upon what we discussed today. And now, if you will, please, Maestro.
Republican base in Missouri is sure getting scary, man. It looks like a whole state turned itself into a sanatorium, a sanitarium. Republicans talk of socialist plots, of course carried out by Obama bots. Mandatory health care, mandatory birth control, mandatory heart transplants and abortions for us all. But what Obama bots mostly want is their guns and their religion. Oh. So what's gonna happen in Maine? I think you'll find we'll be much more sane. But Republicans still talk of socialist plots, of course carried out by Obama bots. Mandatory health care, mandatory birth control, mandatory heart transplants and abortions for us all. But what Obama bots mostly want is our guns and our religion. Guns and our religion. That's what Obama bots mostly want. Our guns and our religion.
I liked it. Little, little Iggy Pop-ish, maybe? A little, Garage Bandish? Rather impressive. All right, folks, let us head into our better half of our program, where I will discuss two things that I think that are both encouraging developments just in terms of people's healths, and also are great examples of the implications of government regulation. These aren't earth-shattering things, although some of them are. You can call the program at 646-257-3920 or on Skype at Majority Live. I think we'll save the Santorum calls. He's going to be around for a lot longer. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can remember, support this show by becoming a member. That almost rhymed, didn't it? Remember, become a member at majority.fm. Your support keeps the show alive. Your continued support can ensure the show will continue. You can also support the show by other means. Go to the support the show page at majority.fm. But really, we need your memberships. Really. No. Really. All right, folks. See you on the better half.